Activating meridians. Alignment. Instability in field. Negative. Charge aligning matrix field. Positive. Coordinates reached, Commander.
Activate the Shardé field.
Activation of multidimensional engines.
Launch communications probe.
Power levels to maximum.
Activate all dimensional levels of communication.
Communication established.
The voice you hear is known as Bob. Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached our destination. This is the last slave planet in the galaxy. Under all agreements, under all rights, under galactic law, we now proclaim this planet free. The dissension of the true human consciousness has begun.
Energizing Shambhala Diamonds.
The men, women, and children of this planet are now set free.
Brickfields activated.
You have already reached.
Activate Shambhala Diamond.
Critical mass.
Integration onto microcosm, expanding linear space.
Prepare for landing. Prepare for landing. Prepare for landing.
Press the ground around the matrix now.
Free space activation.
Hello, this is the Robo Show. No, it's the Dark City Show. I haven't got a clue what's going to happen. Really enjoyed the other show, so it's given me the superpower to be able to speak on the microphone. If you want to phone in, 0161-298-0298. That's from the UK. If you want to phone in from outside, is it an outside job or is it an inside job? Anyway, if you want to phone from the rest of the world, it's +44 161-298-0298. Or you can Skype at Bob's Backyard. See how many we can get in tonight. Call in any way you want. Right, over to the rest of the crew.
Well, you know, the cat's away. So what are us mice going to get up to? That depends very much on you people, because remember, this is not our radio.
It's your radio.
Yeah. So call on in, join in, bring up some subjects, type them in chat. You've got IRC chat there. You can bang some questions if you're too shy to get up on the radio.
That's a good thing we can do. Actually, ask the crew. Call in and ask the crew whatever you want, and any one of us or all of us, call in and ask us.
I'm only doing 1970s hair question.
So who we got tonight? Well, we've got the servo, fortunately. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. We've got Sarah. We've got Sudama. We've got Robo and Prajna and Carly here. And that's it at the moment. So before we start getting too quiet, get on your Skype, give us a bell, and let's see where we get to.
And in the meantime, I'm going to tell you about myself and Sarah have just done a show on gratitude, and there's something that happened. It was last Tuesday, so it was 7 days ago today. Prajna took me by the hand and led me out of the caravan, sat me down in the sunshine, wrapped the towel around my shoulders and gave me one of the best haircuts I have ever had. It absolutely looks lovely. So I'm really grateful for this gorgeous new haircut that the Prajna's given me. I was amazed when I met Prajna. He's got dreads. My Prajna has dreads hidden under an orange hat. And after a while of being with him and living this sort of life on the road, this traveller lifestyle, I decided that dreads might be a good idea for me because I have very long hair and I needed to find a way to manage it without having to wash and condition it all the time and all that sort of stuff. So I had a go at dreads, and that lasted for about 6 months. But they were driving me mad. My scalp was itching all the time, and it just looked like a great big rat's nest on my head, I'll have to be honest. So it was December. I forced Prajna against his will to chop them all off. And I had short hair then for, one of the very few times in my life I've ever had short hair. And now it's completely cropped and it looks fantastic. So I'm really grateful to my beautiful Prajna, who is not only a fantastic lover and a fantastic husband, he is a fantastic hairdresser as well. And that's it, a little bit of randomness thrown in there.
And he's also a bit embarrassed too. We've just had Chris Sparky join us. Chris, hey. How you doing, bro? Maybe he's joined us in mute mode. Have you got your microphone muted there, Chris?
He's muted.
I see.
Mystical he's working.
Yeah, it's working great.
Yeah, Chris Sparky says in the Skype chat, wait, he says, so we will wait. Hopefully not in silence.
Are you and Sarah going to do a show on waiting days after you've done what's anger next week?
Anger next week, and maybe patience.
I'm here now, guys. You can hear me,
Chris. Yeah, sure, we can. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I've had a great day. How are you? How is everyone?
We're fine, actually.
Yeah, everybody seems to be in good spirits at the moment, which is fantastic.
I was just listening to you talking about dreadlocks, and I had the same kind of thing myself. But it was, I had a problem, my kids gave me head lice because they don't have the nit nurses in the schools anymore.
Yeah.
And they put the onus onto the parents, and the products are, the substandard products, the pharmaceutical products. And so they kept giving me nits all the time. And I had my dreads for about 2 years. I loved them, but the itching was just out of this world, the itching and the dreads and the nits. So I ended up chopping them off in the end, and then I met up with Bob of Earthwise, and he came up with all these solutions that I should have known before I chopped them off.
Mine were just... sorry, go on, Chris.
Yeah, Bob's got some great information about everything you've got a problem with. He'll give you a bit of information. Yeah, he said, I know the cure. You just needed to do this. I can't recall exactly what it was I had to put on there. But yeah, he's good like that, old Bob.
Was it neem oil?
I believe so.
Oh, yeah, there we go. I've just been cooking me dinner, that's why I haven't been talking much. But yeah, neem oil is supposed to be brilliant because they've become immune, haven't they, to a lot of the I nearly said fleece sprays, the knit lotion. So neem oil, well, you can't do this if you've got dreads, but neem oil and conditioner. You just put lots of conditioner with neem oil and maybe some tea tree put in there, and then just put that all over your kids' heads and then comb that through with a knit comb. It is still one of the best ways to actually get rid of knits.
But you say that's not the dreads.
Well, you can't comb through knits, dreads.
No, you don't want to be putting conditioner on dreads either.
No.
They'll drop out.
You know that Monsanto tried to patent neem. In fact, they actually got a patent on it.
I thought you said
then,
they were
making
dreadlocks,
then. Yeah, and then Vandana Shiva, who is an amazing Indian woman who campaigns on all kinds of environmental and human rights things, but particularly environmental things, she went over to Brussels and actually challenged the patent and won it. But neem is one of the most medicinal trees on the planet, and the Indians use it a huge amount in Ayurvedic medicine.
So where is that tree native to?
India.
India. Oh, I see.
And also, if you have those pesky little mites on your cannabis plants as well, neem oil is the preferred way of dealing with those as well.
Spider mites.
Spider mites.
Yeah, yeah.
What about frips?
What about witches?
It's just another insect that lives on plants. But I suppose it would work for all of them, really. It's a good preventive as well, you know, just putting a little bit of tea tree or neem oil on your kids' hair when they're going to school prevents them from getting it in the first place. They don't like it. And prevention's always better than cure, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
certainly.
especially when it comes to things living on you. Scabies has got to be the worst, though. I don't know what I'd do if I had scabies. It's horrible.
I've never had it.
Oh, it's a
phone.
I've only had
it when I was a teenager.
How did you cure? How did you ringworm?
Medicine that somebody recommended that's probably deadly stuff called tinidum. I don't know what it is, but it's probably, you know, highly toxic stuff. I think there are probably an awful lot more natural cures for dealing with it. Yeah.
Well, actually, I mean, I suppose, seeing as we've come down on this particular avenue of conversation, natural remedies and things, let's think of some ailments. Like, for example, did you know that lavender essential oil is fantastic on burns? It just takes the heat right out of burns. So if you get some burns at all this year, just give yourself a rub with some lavender essential oil, and no more sting, no more hotness.
It's really good for sunburn.
Yeah.
Proper burns. My friend, he ended up in a house fire, actually. He was in a flat 9 stories up. I'll tell the story, you might as well. He was in a flat 9 stories up, and he woke up with the smell of, it was a council flat, actually, burning. And he couldn't get out the flat because the way out was completely blocked with fire. So he had to climb out the window and hold on to a ledge. He was stood on a ledge which must have only been about 3-4 inches, so he squashed up against the wall, clinged up onto this ledge, and his top managed to set on fire, but he managed to somehow get his top off while it was on fire. And then the fire brigade come, and then they put a ladder up, and the ladder was too short to reach him.
God.
So then, yeah, I know. Imagine that.
You must carry on sketch.
Yeah, it is. Well, this man, he has all the... He has amazing stories to tell, actually. You can sit there and talk for ages about all these things that happen to him that he goes through. But, and so in the end, they actually managed to get into the flat and get him out. But his girlfriend at the time put neat lavender on his back, and you should never do that because it's pretty full on. Oh, and they burn. But it actually healed really, really well. Really well.
Did you get onto the ladder?
They had to come into the flat and get him in the end.
Ah, okay.
Because the ladder was too short. That must, you know, he couldn't believe it, you know. He thought, at last I'm being rescued, because he's on this ledge, he was on fire, managed to get his top off, so he's got all burns all the way up his back and on his arms. And gets the fire brigade come, it must be relieved that they've got this ladder, and they start putting it up, and then he's just too short.
Jump on the ladder.
It's like, no! But luckily, they managed to get him out. And that was the council house, council flats, actually, and the smoke alarms didn't go off. The person whose flat it was did actually want to put their own smoke alarms in there, but the council told them that they weren't allowed, and when there was actually a fire, the smoke alarms didn't go off.
Well, the council should be getting those checked at regular interval, actually. Being an electrician, I know these things. They should be getting them checked at least every couple of years if it's a residential place. So she should get on and research that.
Yeah, this is quite a few years ago now. That must be about 10 years ago now.
Right.
1 month for remedies we've come across is apple cider vinegar. And it's incredible with wounds. We had a friend who managed, while he was chopping out kindling, managed to take a wonderful swipe at his hand. And it's funny because I was watching.
He just took a chunk out of the back of his hand with this little kindling axe. Yeah. How he managed it, we just don't know.
Well, actually, I was watching him. As he was chopping the kindling, and I thought that, you know, he doesn't look all that confident at doing it. But anyway, he whacked himself on the back of the hand, took this big chunk out, and came in, and we just washed it off in apple cider vinegar and spit a bit of apple cider vinegar, and within days it was all healed over and it was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It stings like a bitch when you've got an open wound and you bathe it in apple cider vinegar. But yeah, the healing time is just cut in half, if not, you know, less or more, whichever way round you want to look at it. But cider vinegar also, it's great taken internally, you know, use it on your salad dressings and things. And even just put a capful or two in a glass of water and drink that. Tastes quite similar to lemonade, really. It's a very refreshing drink in the summer.
It's supposed to be good for dieting as well.
What was that, Sarah?
It's supposed to be good for dieting as well. Do you know how to make it? Shall I tell you how to make apple cider vinegar? Shall I tell you how to make it then? Okay, right.
Yeah.
When you're making an apple crumble or something like that, and you peel all your apples. Pull the apple off, and then you're left with your core and your peel.
Yeah.
You get your core and your peel, and you put it into a crock pot or something like that, a sealed container. Fill it up with water. Fill it up with the apple peel and the apple cores, and leave it for a few weeks. I can't remember the exact amount of time you leave it for, but you just leave it basically, and then you come back to it, and then you've got apple cider vinegar.
Welcome to the Dock City Natural Pharmacy. If you'd like to bring in with any ailments, I'm sure we can fix you.
For the listeners out there.
Overripe pears, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago or something. We bought these three bags of overripe pears because they're cheap and, you know. The guy who at the fruit and veg market that we went to, he told us just to help ourselves because we just bought a load of stuff from him, 15 quid's worth of stuff, and we could just, you know. So we had these three bags of quite juicy pears, and we ate a few of them, and then the rest sat in a carrier bag. And by the time I looked at them a few days ago, they smelt like vinegar. So I put them outside for the rabbits and the birds and the animals and things. And it kind of reminded me, and I thought, this could actually become vinegar, like apple cider vinegar. So, yeah, these are really easy to make. And I'm delighted that I now know how to make apple cider vinegar, because we're out. We've got some tiny mother stuff in a bathroom cabinet, but no apple cider vinegar.
All these fruits got enough natural sugars in them to make their own yeast and brew themselves. And they do. That's what they do when they're rotting. Making their own
alcohol.
You can make yeast from any fruit, any little bit of fruit, and that with that yeast you can bake bread and use it to make other alcohols.
And Sudama's talking about kombucha vinegar. What are we going to say about that, Sudama?
Kombucha.
You there, bro? Can you talk?
It's just I find it easy to make because you're supposed to brew kombucha for so many weeks and it's supposed to be like sparkling white alcohol, but I always leave it too long and it really smells and tastes like vinegar.
I don't even know what kombucha is.
It's made from tea. It's kind of a drink, very, very healthy. An awful lot of fermented foods and fermented drinks are actually very good for you. Kombucha is actually made from tea, and it tastes a bit like a light vinegar, really. It's actually quite pleasant to drink. You just drink a little bit every day. It's got lots of nice enzymes in it that's good for your body.
It is actually a fungus, Prasna.
Yeah, it's like a mushroom.
It's a mushroom. Yeah. You it's a fungus. It's a mushroom, and you have to feed it every day. You have to feed it. I think it's sugar. I did have one, but it died in the bottom of the fridge.
Kept in the fridge?
Yeah, it just died. It didn't work out quite right. I was in the middle of moving and stuff at the time. Yeah, probably, because you can get kombucha chambers, can't you? Like big clay, like pot. What are they? What's that word I'm looking for? Begin with P. You make tile porcelain, like a big porcelain like crock thing with a little tap and that at the end. And you're supposed to feed. Is it sugar? Do you just feed it sugar?
Yeah, you feed it sugar, and you can use different teas as long as the tea's not an oily based tea.
They call it the mother of vinegar as well. I used to make it.
And then what's the one that you make from coconut as well? That's quite nice. I quite like that.
Begins with a K.
That's kombucha you're thinking of?
No, the coconut one we made. It,
kefir. Is it kefir?
Yeah.
You can make that out of milk as well, can't you?
You can make it out of milk. In fact, I think normally it's made out of milk, but we found that you could make it out of coconut or coconut milk as well.
There's a website called superfoodsforsuperhealth.com, which is an absolutely brilliant website. It's like an encyclopedia. It is so comprehensive, and it goes into fermented foods and raw foods and juicing and what are superfoods and what benefits they have and all of that. It is all there on superfoodsforsuperhealth.com. Well worth an explore if you're into that sort of thing. If you like to be healthy and fit and vital and all that. Yeah.
So who's jumping in with the next subject, or have we got more to say about this? In fact, we had a friend stuck whose nose around the door earlier, saying that he's got a dreadful chest infection, and they've had him on antibiotics and all this kind of thing. And I discovered today that comfrey, which is known as neck bone because it's very, very good for broken bones, for sprains and swellings and that kind of thing, I found out that you can make a tea from it as well, which is also extremely good for chests and chest infections.
Mm. Well, while we're on this subject then, excuse me, I'm eating my dinner as we're doing this radio show.
I'm eating chicken.
Cleavers, you know those things, the sticky bud, those sticky weeds that climb all around your flower beds and climb all through the hedgerows and stick to your clothes when you try and pull them up and all of that. You pick cleavers. Now, you can boil them very quickly, lightly boil them in salted water, and you can eat them as a veg, and you can have them in salad and all stuff like that. But if you make a tea from cleavers, they are really good for cleaning out your lymph system. So if you're kind of prone to abscesses or boils or anything like that, cysts, then you've probably got some blockage and crap in your lymph system. So make yourself some cleaver tea and drink it, and ta-da,
yeah, you're better. With a bit of lemon as well, and you don't want to put boiling water over your cleavers, just a kettle that's gone off boil, really, and then put a bit of lemon in there. But I'll tell you something else that's good for your lymphatic system is walking. Walking is actually really good for your lymphatic system. It's really good for your digestive system. If you're constipated, it's good for that as well. You know, that is part of how your body functions, is actually walking. Actually kicks all these systems into gear, like, so it's really important to like just get about 20 minutes, half an hour walk a day or whatever, just to, if you want to have optimum lymphatic system and digestive system and just be healthy.
Well, the worst thing you can do is to be sat down all day. Now, I realise there's lots of people out there don't have any choice in the matter. But if you do have a choice in the matter, then, yeah, even just getting up and wandering around your house or whatever, but, you know, get out and get some fresh air as well.
And it is the perfect weather for that. Yeah, we're both saying the same thing. And it is the perfect weather for getting out there, isn't it? I just loved it at the seaside today. The seaside was amazing. What I'm going to do next, though, I'm going to change the subject a bit now. What I'm going to do next is I'm going to go up to the northeast coast where I was again today, up by Whitby, and they do boat trips there, whale watching boat trips there. And I'm going to go on a whale watching trip. My friend said that he went on one for 2 hours, and there was this whale basking and jumping up out of the water, breaching, you know, jumping out of the water for 2 hours. They was on a boat watching this whale.
Wow.
I think it's absolutely amazing because people just don't realise what we've got on our waters around Britain, do they? You know, you go all the way abroad to all these exotic countries and people want to go and see the dolphins, they want to go see the whales and they want to go and swim with them and they want to do this and that. And it's like, well, we've actually got it all on our own coast. We've got the second largest shark in the world that's just coming to Cornwall now. Right, but now this is... it's not the whale shark, that's the biggest one, but it's the basking shark. It's a vegetarian, it eats plankton, but that is the second largest shark in the world. Isn't that amazing? That just swims in our oceans, in our waters. The Outer Hebrides is the most densely populated place in the world for whales and dolphins. We are so lucky where we live, we're so fortunate, there's so much to see out there, so much beautiful stuff. It's amazing.
And it seems that someone just tried to call in the show, and we missed the call. So if they'd like to call in again, we'll do our best to patch you in and put you live on air.
The call should be being diverted to Robo, so we should be able to get them. So try again. If it doesn't work, then we'll think of a solution.
I've made a cup of tea now, so... I can answer the call.
try again, Robo's back. And in the meantime, we'll talk about wildlife in Britain. Because as Sarah says, not only are the waters full of amazing and varied wildlife, so is inland. You know, there is so much to see and experience in this amazing island. This is such a beautiful place that we live. I think that when we're stuck in towns and cities, we often fail to recognise just how stunning it is.
Oh, it's true.
One of the best things is, because it is quite a small island, everywhere is pretty accessible. We can get into the countryside quite easily. We don't have to drive for miles and miles through deserts and things like that. We live in this lush green island and... get out there and see it.
And Barry in the IRC chat has just said that he got to swim with whales once in his life. It was a spiritual experience. I can imagine, you know, people tell the most amazing stories of just being in the water with dolphins and interacting with dolphins. It must be incredible to swim with whales.
Yeah, absolutely amazing experience. Another thing that I noticed is that people are more concerned in a lot of ways, not everyone, obviously, about the environment abroad, like the whales and dolphins abroad, the Amazon forest abroad, all the amazing nature and wildlife that's abroad, and they totally neglect our own. And, you know, we need more people going out into the countryside and taking note and actually being part of the natural ecosystem of this island. It is absolutely, because it's an island, you know, the migratory birds that we get up on Bempton Cliffs, they've got one of the biggest puffin populations in the world. It is absolutely amazing. But they have had a bit of a hard time this year in all the wind and rain. It has pretty given their population a bit of a nosedive. But hopefully they'll manage to pull themselves through if we have a good summer. because last year as well, last summer, with all that rain, lots of birds really struggled last summer as well, because with all that rain, there wasn't enough insects about, so they didn't have enough food and that, and their nests were getting flooded out and everything. But people need to focus their attention on what's here rather than focusing their attention on what's abroad. We've got everything here that you can possibly imagine. Well, we ain't got crocodiles, but we've got snakes, we've got adders. I love crocodiles, I do. Oh, they're amazing creatures. Saltwater alligators, wow. Mm-hmm. Something else, aren't they? But they're all abroad, but there we go.
Well, you know, this winter that kind of went on all the way through spring this year, I got quite concerned about the local wildlife because there was no insects for the birds just at the time of year where they would usually be nesting. And there was nothing for the rabbits and the foxes and things. So I just started soaking barley and beans and things and taking them out and scattering them about for the birds just to help out, you know. And the birds looked really grateful. They woofed it up.
Yeah. One of the things about living in a motorhome or caravan is it means that we spend a lot of time out in the countryside, and we're seeing all kinds of things. We're fascinated with a little bird about pigeon size at the moment that's got some quite striking colours on it, and it keeps flying backwards and forwards.
I saw two before, babe. One went in that tree over there, and one saw going in that tree over there. So the two of them, they've got sort of like peachy coloured chests and black and white stripes on the tail, and yeah, not quite sure what they are, but we'll find out.
Do they wag their tail?
Don't think so. I don't think they're any kind of wagtail.
No. Well, I don't know what they are. I'm not very good with my birds. My dad is. He knows loads. I love it going out with people that do know, because I do try and learn, but for some reason I find it quite difficult with birds. I seem to forget what they're called. I know, like, you've got red shanks, green shanks, spoonbills, and all sorts of different things out there. Amazing, amazing birds of prey. So I've seen so many birds of prey today. It was just gorgeous. And when they're hovering in the sky and they're flapping their wings just about to come down and grab something, I had an interesting fact on the radio the other day, not this radio but a different one, and it was like what can an owl see in the candlelight from 50 yards away?
Can you say that again?
What can an owl see from 50 yards away with just a candlelight, with the light just candlelit?
Nothing.
A mouse. A mouse. They can see a mouse. They've got amazing, amazing eyesight. Absolutely amazing. The way these animals have evolved and to use these abilities that we've kind of lost, you know, like monkeys, they've got photographic memories, haven't they? They've been doing experiments with them, like, to see about their memories, and they can look in one direction and look somewhere else but remember everything from the other direction, because it's so important for them to have that kind of memory, because for their own safety, you know, for defense mechanism. And we would have been so much more like that, I reckon, once upon a time. You know, we never stop learning, though, and we never stop evolving and developing as human beings. And I found personally, the more I learn and the more open I am to learning, the more I learn. I don't believe all this rubbish about once you reach a certain age, that's it, you don't learn no more. That's just crap, that is. I learn loads all the time. Haven't you?
No.
The older you get, the harder it is to learn. I just think the less you learn, people stop learning. I think that's all it is, and then they get out of practice of learning. But if you keep learning all the time, and keep doing new stuff all the time, well, then your capacity to learn is just going to get greater and greater, isn't it?
I think you're definitely right. People do decide to stop learning. They sort of get somewhat of an arrogance about themselves, that they know everything, and they don't need to pay attention or change any of their opinions on anything. They get stuck in their ways. I see it all the time. But, I mean, there is a new generation of people that are willing to open up and explore different possibilities, and well, here we are now, exploring it all.
For the listeners out there, like, behind the scenes, every time Chris speaks, sparks come out of him.
Yeah.
This has been RoboHippy.
I've got to be careful where I face, because I'll ruin the screen of the computer.
Have you tried a tinfoil hat, Chris?
I've already got one of them on.
Have you got your earthing strap as well?
Yeah.
What about a shower cap? You got one of them?
I've got a gas mask.
Gas mask, even better.
I borrowed it off the Dark City Gimp. I've got to have it back tomorrow night. He needs it. He's going out on the tiles.
I was going to ask, what's the Gimp up to tomorrow night that he needs his gas mask back?
He's assured me he needs it for something. He's not let me in on it yet. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe it's someone in the pipeline. We'll see.
Okay, next subject. Or shall we stay on with the Dark City Gimp? The mysterious Dark City Gimp. Who is he? Where does he live?
I want him in my cellar. Can I have him, please?
Well, we are doing a timeshare thing on him, actually. It's not a voluntary thing. It's a mandatory thing. We've got to share him. We've got to take responsibility. He's been 2 weeks in my cellar so far. So who wants him next?
Me. I want him next.
I'm not building a cellar.
You're in a caravan.
The people downstairs would have something to say about it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think they would.
So, what kind of care does the Dark City Gimp require?
He likes a lot of darkness.
Did you say a hair then? Was it 1970s hair question? No. Please do call in. I'm answering 1970s hair questions just for tonight.
So how popular was the dreadlock in the 1970s then, Robo?
1970s? No. Roy Wood, maybe? Very popular.
There was a famous Avenger who had a particular hairstyle in the 70s that all the girlies ran out and had to have this hairstyle. Can you remember the name of this said Avenger and the hairstyle which was named after her?
Ronald McDonald.
No.
No.
It would have been the Purdy.
Pick yourself.
The Purdy.
It was the Purdy. Yeah, nice one, Chris.
Bob Marley.
I've never heard of that haircut, but I've heard of her from Avengers.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember running out and, well, telling me, Mum, I want a Purdy, and went to the hairdressers and got a Purdy. It turned out it was a page boy, which is what I'd had all my life anyway.
So is that like a... That's like a bob with a high back, is it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's like you know the bowl. You sit the bowl on the head and around it.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that.
Sort of like a short back and leave the ears.
Like a monk thing, but no bald bit.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the monk without the bald patch.
I went to a Deep Purple gig. It was 25 years later. Right, when they brought an album out, he says, right, this is a brand new track, we've never played it before, and he was telling the truth. And then I saw him 25 years later, and he says, this is a new track, you've never heard it before. So 25 years later, he said the same thing at the two gigs.
Maybe he just stayed there all that time, and he was just playing. So you went home, and then come back 25 years later, he's still playing away. Is that interesting?
But all the audience there were like, oh, bikers, rockers, Deep Purple, you know, the sort of thing. But I looked down onto the audience and it was like a monk's convention with all the bald spots.
The monk's mullets. Mullets everywhere, as far as the eye can see.
Mullets are okay, 1970s hair question.
They're okay if you're a biker. Yeah.
They're still all right if you're American, apparently.
Yeah, but you've got to live in a caravan.
No, a trailer. Yeah, live in a trailer park and have a bullet. Yeah.
No offence, Raj and Kelly, no offence.
I think we've got an incoming Barry.
Yeah, we've got Barry just joined us, and he's going to tell us about the swimming with whales.
Oh, cool.
Barry, you're there. Can you hear us?
Oh, he's gone.
Has he fell off?
Oh, he's come back.
He's on his way back.
They have brought him back alive.
Was he swimming with whales or in whales?
Barry, are you there?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, hi. Hey, listen.
All right, Barry.
I'll just take a couple minutes of your time, but you guys talking about whales got the memory going, of course. One of the neatest experiences I had in my life was 1994, or I think it was 94 or 95. We had an El Nino Kernet come up the west coast of Vancouver Island and up the Charlottes. And we had a great white shark wash up on the beach just outside of Masset. An Indian gentleman called me and told me about it. So I took my dive gear over to the Charlottes, got to go down and see the carcass of this 18-foot great white shark. Used up the air in my tank, and I was coming back into Queen Charlotte to take the ferry home. I had about 6 hours. My tank was empty, and I was very lucky that I had an obliging fireman because I had my paddy card in my pocket. He came down to the fire station and filled my tank for me. When I came into Queen Charlotte City, I looked out in the bay and I seen poof, poof, poof. And I realized that there was whales in the bay, and I had no air in my tank. So I called this fireman. He came down to the station, filled my tank to 2,300 pounds, put my gear on, parked my truck, put my gear on. I swam out from shore about a quarter mile. I went down about 30 feet, equalized the air in my buoyancy compensator, so I was sitting absolutely motionless at 30 feet under the surface. I had about 80 feet of visibility in the water, and I had 25 to 30 foot Alaska grays coming in, swing at me, turning and swimming away for about 20-25 minutes. And it was, without a doubt, folks, the most spiritual experience I've ever had in my life. And I've been blessed living in British Columbia. I've had tons of great, great outdoor experiences in my life, but this one here is something that I will remember and I love to share with people, and I will share with people till the day I die, because it was so cool having these animals. And, like, it was funny because I'm swimming out from shore and I'm snorkeling out from shore, and I'm saying to myself, Barry, these animals aren't going to hurt you. Barry, these animals aren't going to hurt you, because they're swimming right underneath me and they're like 25, 30 feet long. They look like a freight train under the water. And I got out like about a quarter mile from shore, and I sat there under the water for about 20 minutes and had these animals swimming around me. And it changed my life. So I wanted to share that story with you guys. It was incredible. It was lucky I had an obliging fireman that came down to the station and filled my tank, because my tank was empty because I'd expelled it seeing a great white. So on that trip to the Charlottes, I got to see the carcass of an 18-foot great white and got to swim with whales. I mean, how could it be a better trip, man? It was incredible. So I wanted to share that story with you guys.
That sounds amazing. It's a shame the great white was dead, though. I love great whites. I love sharks.
Yeah, but you know what it was? It was the year we had the El Nino come up the coast, and this great white came up the coast, got hit into the cold water. Once it gets to a certain point, the water currents change. It got into the cold. It died, and its carcass washed up just outside of Masset. Well, one of the local natives there laid claim to it, and what he did is he sunk the carcass underwater because he wanted the lice to remove all parts of the shark except for the skull fracture, and he would have had the sinew down the center of the shark. And when I descended on it, was only 20 feet down. When I dove on that shark, it was about, I'd say, two-thirds gone. The lice had done quite a job on it already, and it had only been down for about, not even 3 weeks. It was lucky I was doing work over there at the time for the Department of National Defense. So it all tied together. I was doing a job. I got to dive on this. Then I was heading home. The trip was paid for, and I got to swim with whales. And after it was all over, I just said, hey, thank God for nature.
Oh, we've just been doing
everything
the show.
Kind of fell, it was ironic how everything just fell together, and I got to do that at that particular point because, like I said, my tank was empty. Yeah. But I've been diving on the coast here for 35 years now, so I enjoy diving.
Great story, Barry. I can imagine how moving that must have been.
It was spiritual, Dawn. Like it's like these animals, they were coming in and looking at me. And of course, you know, you're making a hell of a lot of noise underwater when you're expelling air. And of course, you're excited. So you're using oxygen a little faster than I normally would. I had a real hard time controlling my heartbeat. I mean, you get these animals coming at you and they're turning away and looking at you. And there was probably, going by memory, I think there was probably 7 or 8 different ones that were in the pod that were coming in and having a look at what I was and what I was making all the noise about. And it was just, I wish I'd had a camera. So one time in all my diving years that I wish I'd had a camera. Now I have a camera, but whether I ever get to experience something like that again in my lifetime, I don't know. And if I do, it'd be a very lucky man.
Yeah.
Barry, the first time that I went diving, I went with a friend. I was working as an adventure training instructor, and he was dive qualified. And he said to me, "Oh, do you want to come for a dive off the end of the jetty?" So we get all kitted up and we go down there. And actually, I felt really comfortable underwater. I wasn't breathing quickly or anything like that. I felt very relaxed. But then he was showing some divers' signs, and one of them nearly made me spit out my mouthpiece just because I couldn't work out what he meant by it. But it looked very, very funny. When we got up in the air again, I said, "So what was that sign?"
Okay, now you're going to hear another story. I'm going to tell you one more story now because this one will make you laugh. You got a minute?
Hold on. So I said, "What?"
You got a minute? I'll tell you one more that'll make you laugh.
I said, "What's that sign you were showing me?" And he said, "Well, what it actually means is fucking spiders. Look at that." So try and work out how the hand signal for that looks.
I'll share one more with you real quick in my diving years. I was out with a gentleman who's a professional diver. I dive with him all the time. His name's Gary. We were at a place called Triple Island. There's one little island out there that if you go down 20 feet under the water, you get a vertical drop, almost like somebody took a knife straight down for about 200 feet, a perfectly vertical wall. And what grows on these walls are all these gooey ducks, anemones, urchins, all kinds of sea life. And Gary's done this before. He took me out there for a dive, and he showed me what he does. He goes down there on these shelves. We're down about 60 feet. We started breaking up anemones and gooey ducks, and the matter starts floating in the water. Well, all of a sudden, you get rock cod and gray cod. All these cod start showing up, and they start actually eating the stuff right out of your hands. Well, we're having a ball doing this, just enjoying it, man. These cod are all around us. Gary taps me on the shoulder, and I'm pointing over to his left, and I'm looking, and holy shit, excuse my language, here comes a fucking sea lion. This sea lion with 1,200-pound bull sea lion, this is not, I'm not exaggerating here, guys. We're 60 feet into the water. We have a 1,200-pound bull sea lion swim up to us. He flares about 8 to 10 feet away from us, looks at us, shows us his teeth, and then swims away. Well, when I was doing my certifications in diving, of course, we were told many, many times that sea lions have been known to attack divers and be very wary around them. And, of course, this flashes in my mind as soon as I see this thing coming at me. Well, we got up to the surface. I pulled the regulator out of the bottom of my throat. I had to dig it out because it was stuck down there. I took off my wetsuit, and there was shit right down to the bottom of my boots. I think every bit of shit inside of my body came out of me, buddy. And that was one of the freakiest things that ever happened to me. I had to share that one with you. It was quite an experience having an animal like that come at you when you know they can be aggressive.
Sure enough. There's some interesting times in the water. I went diving.
I can imagine you on the dock side at the end emptying the shit out of your boobs. Oh my god.
Well, I had to, man. It was warm. It was like, holy shit, man.
That's some mighty brown water.
Holy shit. This animal looked like a fucking. It looked like it was going to eat us, you know? Anyways. And we're, you know, and the thing about it, brothers, you're 60 feet down. You know, I can't get to the surface from 60 feet in any quick time. And this thing's 20 feet away when I see it, or 25 feet away. And it's got to be 1,200 pounds. And I'm going, holy fuck. it was an experience.
I nearly got dragged out to sea when I was diving for parwa, a shellfish in New Zealand. And I went out with this big Murray fella. And it's a case of diving down to the bottom of the kelp. You can hold on to a bit of kelp. And then you've got to winkle these things off the rocks with a knife,
right.
Stick them in a swim back up to the surface, drop them in a little net and so on. But this was in a place with an incredible tidal rip on it. And when we went out to start getting these things, it was actually okay. But then this rip started happening. And after a while, there was no way I could make any headway against it, particularly trying to drag this net of shellfish after me. So in the end, I had to hold onto a big piece of seaweed, big piece of kelp. He swam ashore, put his shellfish, big net of shellfish ashore, came out, got my bag, took them, and then came out. Well, in fact, then I was all right when I was on my own, but yeah, scary stuff for sure.
Yeah, you got to be very wary when you're diving. There's all kinds of conditions that you can get into that can get you into a lot of trouble.
But, you know, my experience in the 30 years that I've been diving, I won't take all your time, but my 30 years of diving, I've been lucky because we've been out on sunny days, and the color that I have seen under the ocean is just unbelievable. That's all I can say. So people that haven't dove, I encourage them to try it. You have to be, of course, a certain kind of individual to do it, but the color of the ocean is just unbelievable, and I've had some incredible experiences diving. I've done quite a few shipwrecks. I've extracted portholes out of shipwrecks. I extracted 18 portholes out of a ship called the Ohio that was a British steamer that sunk in Butedale in 1905, and we dove that wreck for 3 days in a row. And actually, the first 30 feet of the wreck is pretty well gone. You get down about 40, 50 feet underwater, and the ship is basically intact. The superstructure, of course, is collapsed and everything else. But this was about, 25 years ago. We got to dive on it for 3 days in a row. And I still have these portholes sitting in my living room now. So I got all kinds of mementos of my diving days. We've had incredible times diving. It's a real, really good thing to do.
Do you ever get, claustrophobic when you're diving?
If you're at all claustrophobic, then you're not a diver. If you have any kind of claustrophobia in your body, you won't make a diver, because diving subjects your body to a feeling of claustrophobia. One thing I've learned over my years of diving is I relax when I'm diving. My breathing is very controlled. You have to be, because if any kind of panic situation you get into diving can really create a lot of problems. The only time I can honestly say in my life, of all my years of diving, was when we were approached by that sea lion, and I was 60 feet underwater. The first thing that flashed in my brain was the training I'd had that, you know, sea lions have attacked divers, they've attacked their lines, they've actually physically attacked divers, and this was a huge animal. And that's the first thing that flashed in my mind. And at that point, I had a real, real hard time controlling my breathing, but I wasn't into a panic situation, but where I felt like my body was going to collapse or anything like that, but I was sucking on the mic on the old regulator pretty hard there for a couple of minutes. Believe me, the shit did flow. It was pretty scary.
I was about to ask, did you really lose control of your bowel?
No, I didn't. Don, I didn't lose control of my bowels. But if I was ever going to lose control of my bowels underwater, that would have been the time, I'll tell you.
Interestingly, Barry, I felt quite claustrophobic inside a decompression chamber when I was diving in the army. That was one of the things that we practiced with, was decompression chamber. But I never felt at all claustrophobic underwater.
I don't experience that at all, man. I love being under the water. It's a whole new world. We do a lot of things here in Rupert. Like back in the turn of the century, there were steamers coming into Prince Rupert. And where the original docks are now, we do a lot of diving there. And my living room is full of chamber pots and cups and plates off the Grand Trunk Pacific Steamship Company and the Union Steamships and Canadian National. That's one of my hobbies. I like collecting stuff off the steamers. And over the years, I've done lots of them in Rupert Harbor. And there is so much stuff down there, man. It's incredible. Incredible.
Well, Barry, we've got about 1.5 minutes left. So it's about time we did a whip round the crew and said, anybody got anything else that they need to slot in this last minute and a half?
Not really. Just thank you, everyone, for listening. I've really enjoyed the show, and I hope you have as much as we have. Cheers.
I've got something to say. I've been working with Vostell today, so I made a song. I put it in the playlist. It should be playing afterwards. Thank you very much, Dark City.
It'll be coming up in just a minute. And so we've managed to scrape through with the skin of our teeth, despite giving Paul a day off.
I'd like to say thanks to Barry for ringing in and being part of the show as well. Fantastic. It's great when we get all these different energies coming together and we all buzz off different things in different ways. It's just brilliant. Love it.
And as we started off by saying at the beginning of the show, this is not our radio, it's your radio. And it becomes your radio not when you sit there boringly and just listen to it. It becomes your radio when you give us a bell. And join in, put your views forward, tell us news from where you are. And so there we are, another Dark City show. Thank you all for listening. We love you lots. Good night.
Oh, wait.
can't wait enough.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Good night. I will
cheers.
What's going on with the server? The server's just... It's logging out in 29 seconds. That's the weirdest thing.
Are we still on air?
We might be.
Yeah, hang up the call, Robo.
Hang up the call.
No, everyone. A robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws. Law zero. A robot may not harm humanity or, by inaction, allow humanity to come to harm.